I'd like to talk tonight about opening. The actor Anthony Hopkins has a motto that he likes to live by. His motto is, expect nothing, accept everything. I hope it's working for Anthony. Maybe it'll work for you. I shared it with a man recently, and he said, that doesn't work for me. That doesn't work for me, he said. I have expectations, and I expect them to be met. There's a man who just got about that close to dying of prostate cancer. Just getting over the prostate cancer with some very, very intensive therapy, radiation. And he has a heart attack. Smoking for 30 years. There's probably nothing anybody could have said to him that could have got him to stop. Except the doctor who stood over him before they stented out his artery. And they said, we know something about these arteries on this part of the heart. And when this artery clogs, it's stress. You have to reduce your stress. And by the way, stop smoking. So he does. But Anthony Hopkins' motto didn't work for him. He said, my motto is from Einstein, which is, imagination is better than knowledge. That's my motto. So I said, maybe we can put Anthony and Albert together. He said, I don't know about that. We are, you could say, learning or relearning to take what's called the one seat. To take the one seat. To learn or relearn to not only pause, but to stop running from your life, from existence, from anything. We're exploring what could be called a clear and committed intention to practice taking the one seat, and please don't misunderstand that taking the one seat means you need to sit on a chair or a cushion or a bench. Taking the one seat means also not running from anything while walking, while eating, while anything's going on. It's not just the pause button. It's the stop button. You're not going to stop experience. Anybody who tries to stop the mind, stop experience, I want to get quiet, I don't want to have a busy mind. The very effort to stop the mind or to stop the feeling intensifies that feeling or thought. Somebody recently described it as this game called whacking the mole. Okay? You whack the mole over here, and it comes up over here. You whack it over there, and it comes up over there. Whack it, whack, 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 and it keeps popping up. Because the nature of this, right here, this process, is to what? Is to open. And we have conceptualizations about opening, that openness or opening means expanding. Contracting, tightening, this is not opening, that's closing. If you'd like, watch during this talk what things are said that work at the level of your conceptual mind, where your conceptual mind goes, oh, that makes sense. And watch for moments where something's said that your conceptual mind might not know what to do with. It might try to do something with it, but it might not know what to do. It might get confused. It might relax. It might go away. So, when a human being learns or relearns to take the one seat, then it's possible to explore what it's like to let everything come up, to let everything arise, whatever it is. To let everything reveal itself without any discrimination, without any inhibiting, without any resistance. Everyone in this room has experienced life at times without any resistance whatsoever. Now, if you think, oh, what this is about is learning how to not resist. What this is about, actually, more accurately than that, is seeing what resistance is. And seeing resistance liberates resistance. As soon as anything is seen clearly, it shows its true nature. I'm going to come back to this notion of what opening actually is. But what I would like to do now is go through, you might say, several areas of opening. They're very standard, very common sense. There's the opening of the body, which includes the breathing and all the sensations, not just some of the sensations, all of the sensations. As you, so to speak, begin to open to all the sensations, there can be moments of realization that no sensation is better than any other sensation. No sensation is right or wrong, although certain sensations may be pleasant and certain other sensations unpleasant. That doesn't make them right or wrong. That doesn't make one better or worse. And that doesn't make you a robot or inert to see this. What it does is it wakes you up, so to speak. I'm using the word you right now, as if there is one. We'll take that apart later. Experiencing this body in a truly open and full way. And that happens through the opening to the sensations, which includes the breathing sensations. Now, for some of us, it can feel like we're learning or relearning how to relax through all these forms of sensation. Sometimes the unpleasantness gets labeled as pain. Painful, 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 painful. That's the brain thinking about the sensation. When the sensation is experienced as it is, it's energy, it's vibration, it's tingling, it's pulsing, it's heat, it's throbbing, it's twisting, it's turning, it's moving, it's torquing, it's bending. These are words that describe the actual energy. The concept laying over some of those unpleasant, you might say, words or sensation, sometimes is pain. Now, we're just sitting here. Nobody's poking you. Okay? Your seat isn't red hot, burning, coals. Just sitting. It's actually pretty nice here. New carpet, pleasant color. To me, it is pleasant. Paint, lights, river, sky, air. Decent food. And this thing starts hurting. We've only been sitting for 3 or 4 hours. This starts hurting. Where is this coming from? Now, it's the height of irrationality to fight with something that's already happening. If I put my hand on a hot stove, it'd be a good idea to, as soon as possible, register those sensations and get it off. But guess what? We all know that by the time you register those sensations, you're already burned. It happened too fast. Didn't catch it. Oops, ice, whatever you do. That's different than sitting here and having feelings, sensations come up that are unpleasant, and then irrationally fighting with them, resisting them. And this is a very obvious thing, but also a very subtle thing. The way the mind at times is conditioned, irrationally so, to resist or fight with something that's already happening. Begin to feel layers at times of tension. And sometimes that tension is actually places of illness or trauma. That this thing's been traumatized in different ways at different times. Sometimes the sensations come. You don't know why these sensations are the way they are. Now, one way to consider this is that everything that's happened to this is in a certain sense recorded or stored. It's impressed. It's called a sankhara in Buddhist psychology. And sankhara means an impression. Okay? And some of these impressions are quite strong, they're quite deep. Analogy would be like taking a chisel and running it in a stone. That's going to last for a good while, isn't it? Now take your finger and run it through the sand on the seashore. Wind might blow, water might come, could be gone in a few hours, could be gone in a minute, could be gone in a day, 2 days. Now take your finger, run it through water. Watch how fast that goes. These are all impressions. You could say different, you could say layers of impressions. Sometimes there's memories in here that first arise as sensations. It's not a clear memory where the mind goes, oh, I see that place, that happened, I fell down, you know, somebody yelled at me, I got upset, blah, blah, blah. But these sensations at times are actually connected to things that are in the memory bank. The opportunity is to let it all come. And realize that in letting it all come, something is transforming. And what is that that's transforming? It's illness, it's trauma, it's suffering that's transforming. And so then, at times, when the unpleasantness arises, there can be resistance to that, learning to soften, relax around the resistance. Here's the discomfort, here's the resistance, here's relaxing around it, soften, relax. Watch what happens to it. As this softening And I don't just mean, I mean softening while taking the one seat, which taking the one seat used to mean to me, don't move. I thought taking the one seat was don't move. Because that's how this mind heard the teachings. Don't move. Meanwhile, I'm resisting through trying to practice not moving. This isn't stopping. This is somebody trying to not move. Notice the difference between that and relaxing into the silence and stillness. That is not synonymous with don't move. So as the resistance to life, let's go with the life of sensation and breathing, as that softens, as that resistance dissipates, even just a little, even just in an afternoon like so far, there's an opening that starts to come through these senses. The senses start to awaken and there's a freshness of contact. The eyes open after a sitting and something's brighter. Something's lighter. Something simpler. And that something is life. That something is you. That something is this. It's lighter. Sometimes. It's like gently touching the refresh button on the computer. Not like banging it. Just gently. Refresh. And that contact. Suddenly that taste comes through. There's that olive oil or whatever it was. There's that feta. There's that lettuce. Lettuce. Lettuce is beautiful. Lemon. Rice. It's not thought about. It's just directly experienced. It's like you're a kid again. We don't remember this so easily, some of us. We don't remember what it was like to be unencumbered as a child, just playing such, I was saying today, in a way where there's no concept of play. I'm not playing. I'm not thinking about this. I am this. Only now, there can be a depth of seeing what is happening. Not just being what is happening, seeing what is happening, while being what is happening. A depth of recognition of a presence inside and through that sense contact. Notice this right now. The ears are hearing these words. The eyes are seeing this room, other bodies. There's a presence in and through, behind and all around this sense contact. And this presence is completely, utterly, totally simple. It's right here. It's so here, totally here. It's also not locatable because it's not a thing. It's not a thing like this is a thing. It's not an object of knowledge. It's operating through the sense contact. Little ones, children, are in this, they are this. At times, they know no other. However, it's not being recognized. That might be why we need to grow up, so we can recognize what we already are, what we've forgotten from when we were little. It's a theory. I mean, you can put your own spin on what we're doing here, and what growing up or living through this form, this life, this existence, these trials, these tribulations, these ups and downs, you can put your own spin on what that's all about. And we do that, don't we? We do put our spin on it. Well, we don't. So this is the healing of the body. Taking the one seat and letting the sensations and letting the breathing manifest. There's no better or worse breath. if the breath is nice and smooth and even, or the breath is choppy or rough or tight, coarse, tense. That's the mind and the body together. The breath is an incredible indicator for the state of this. And if it's not interfered with, that breath unfolds itself. And sometimes it's deeper, sometimes it's more shallow, sometimes it's long, sometimes it's short. None of those breaths are better than other breaths, unless you judge it and say, this is a better breath, I like this breath better. I want a big breath. I'm opening up when my breath is free in the body. The breath is opening up no matter what it's doing. The breath is opening up when it stops. The breath is opening when it's smooth, when it's shallow, when it's rough, when it's pleasant, when it's unpleasant. It's opening all the time. Now, the next area opening is our hearts. Oscar Wilde said it well. He said, hearts are meant to be broken. Losses, griefs, angers, denials, sorrow. You don't get to come here into this world and not have some share of these things. Losses, griefs, angers, denials, sorrows. Wounds, abandonments, rejections, shame, unworthiness, bitterness, regret, resentment, yet unshed tears. Personal sorrows, you could call them, as well as universal sorrows. I was talking to someone today who was overwhelmed for a period of time by this sense of the warfare in the world, the sense of the harming of others. You watch the news enough, if your heart can stay open to it, and it just, that sorrow just goes somehow in and starts to hurt deeply. It can. The Buddha described this as an ocean of tears bigger than the four great oceans. I met a man many years ago in the context of therapy who was a photographer for Greenpeace. His work was to go and document the slaughter of the sea turtles in Indonesia. And he came to me and asked for help in therapy because his heart was overwhelmed by the sorrow and the pain and the grief and the anger that it was arising in his mind and body, heart, through watching this senseless, violent, let's call it what it is, torture of these beautiful creatures which he loved so deeply. He couldn't continue his work. He said, I can't do it. I can't go there again. My heart is overwhelmed and closed with grief. So some therapy took place. His heart shifted. He began to feel, after about 3-4 sessions, feel the movement again because it had stopped. It was just locked. He was overwhelmed and had clamped. Resistance was there, had to peel. The anger was there, had to peel. The sorrow was there. The tears had to come. And he said, I'm ready to go back. Because he's like a warrior. I'm ready to go back. I'm ready to go back. An ocean of tears bigger than the four great oceans. It's part of this world of samsara. It's an ocean of tears. Early childhood and family pain. You can be carrying family pain, transgenerational family pain. The mother and father wounds. They did the best they could. Anything they didn't do well, they did it because they were wounded. And they wounded me, and they wounded you. You don't get to come here and not be wounded. Through the relationship with the mother and father. unless your parents were realized Buddhas. And then maybe their empathy was continuous, unbroken. Don't have to go in digging for this. And just sit in that one-seatedness and let it come up. And through this, you could call it work or practice, discovering the freedom of feeling fully. And I don't just mean feeling fully in sensation. I mean feeling fully emotionally. Wendell Berry, the poet, said it well. He said, "I go among trees and sit still. All my stirring becomes quiet. Around me like circles of water. My tasks lay in their places, where I left them, asleep like cattle. Then, what I'm afraid of comes. I live for a while in its sight. What I fear in it leaves it. And the face of it leaves me. It sings, and I sing its song. What I fear in it that comes leaves it. And the fear of it leaves me." This is the transformation of sorrow, lamentation, and grief. And it's the pearl inside the rough shell. It's the liberation of our hearts. And remember, the heart is opening no matter what it's doing. It's opening in all of its beating, in between the beatings. It's opening when this feels expanded. It's opening when this feels it's closing. It's opening when it's going like this, like this, like this, like this. It's all one big opening. That can shift the mind's conception of opening. Dharma practice is about seeing reality. And in order to see reality, you need to see through your concepts and ideas about what you think is real, what you believe or assume is real. It really is true. All the emotional pain can and will transform in the light of awareness and mindful caring. Living a life of true awakening means coming to terms fully with sorrow and loss. It's inherent in this, coming to terms with sorrow and loss, that we find the true greatness of this heart. We're taught in this society, sometimes in family systems, to get over the loss as quickly as possible, to just go on, to put it behind us. Skip it if you can. None of us can skip it. You can try, but loss and sorrow will find you, it'll track you down, and it will say, "Listen to me. I am here to teach you." You can err a bit on either side there. You can spend too little time with it. You can spend too much time with it. You can get into protracted grief, born out of not dealing with the grief. I protract it and I hold on to it. And it's still there. It's still waiting to be recognized and seen and allowed. Now, this thing we call the mind, simplest way to consider the mind is to consider what thinking is, to consider thought. And if you look at the mind, if you look at the thinking, you can find at times that it's very involved in trying to control and change life. Sometimes a lot, sometimes a little. It can be involved in trying to change the world, trying to change oneself, make it better, make it different. Thoughts are an incredible gift. They can be of great service, but we can't change life or the world with thoughts that are confused and divisive. And at the root of much of the random, at times chaotic thinking, is a mind that's dissatisfied. And if you think of your mind as up here in the head, that's the brain mind. This, right here, sitting here, this is the body mind. This is the body as much as this is the mind. This is the body mind. The thoughts and the feelings and the sensations and the breathing, it's all interrelated. It's all unfolding. It can be distinguished, but none of these so-called parts of this are separate from one another. The root of much of the thoughts in their random, chaotic, and grasping onto things, yeah, that's there too. Thoughts themselves seem to be grabbing at things. Understanding, even insight sometimes is something the mind starts to grasp. When I have an insight, let's see if I can think about that and have an insight. I haven't had any insights. I'm supposed to be having insights. The eyes open and someone sitting over there looks like they're having insights. So I'll sit like them, I'll have an insight. This isn't working, that's another thought. This is working, that's another thought. This is really not working, that's another thought. I'm getting it together, this is feeling better, that's another thought. I've only been here a day. I felt better before I came, that's another thought. Well, at least the banana was good, that's another thought. I like the grapes, another thought. It just goes. It has no pride. It just like throws itself around. Begin to see this. This dissatisfaction that's there sometimes, behind and inside, random, times chaotic thinking, is a habitual, and I do mean that, habitual, unacceptance of life as it is. And what is this unacceptance of life as it is manifesting through the thoughts as? Simple. It's manifesting to the thinking that's comparative, that's judgmental, and that's divisive. And this is incredibly subtle at times. Comparison, judgment that leads to divisiveness. Better, worse, higher, lower, and on it goes. What's fueling that kind of thinking? Dissatisfaction. Habitual unacceptance of life as it is. That doesn't stay isolated. It proliferates. It influences. It ripples. Just like you run your finger through the water and the waves go out. Once we see that the thinking process is not in our control, even just a little bit of insight there, then we can see that the thoughts by nature come and go. There's really, in simple terms, two, you might say, levels of insight. One level is into content. That's seeing what's happening. What's actually happening. You can't see what's actually happening very clearly if you're busy judging it, comparing, controlling, except you could see that. You could see the judging, comparing, controlling. You could see the effect of that. But as you begin to see what's happening, and there is that one seatedness amidst it, then naturally, spontaneously, there's a seeing into the process. The process of life is hidden inside the content. Content is just what's happening. Process that's hidden inside that. That's the nature of life. Most people have a fair amount of awareness of content. They can tell you what's going on, although some people can't. You ask them what they're feeling, they go, I don't know. What's it feel like to not know? I don't know. I talked to a guy recently like that. The three words that were most available to him, I don't know. Have you experienced this before in your life? I don't know. Is there anything you know? I don't know. I mean, it was a real loop, and it was not fun. It was like major stuck. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. But with some care and attention, most humans, even if they've been out of touch a lot with certain parts of the thinking, the feeling, the sensations, the breathing, the senses, this experience, they can tap into it with a little help, a little guidance sometimes, a little instruction, a little yoga. And then we can clear this content. They see what's happening. Oh, this is happening. Oh, this is happening. This is happening. This is happening. As that is observed without interfering, obstructing, or controlling too much, then that which is happening begins to reveal its nature. And this is the process level. This is part of what we'll be going into in our coming days. This is where these liberations of heart, body, mind occur. It's that seeing the nature of things, the process level. Now, most people would agree, from a conceptual level, that their thoughts come and go. But to actually see that with meditative awareness, what is meditative awareness? Meditative awareness is awareness that doesn't interfere. It just observes. You see that all your thoughts are just descriptions of things. They're not the things. Okay, you see clearly, you don't just think book and this are two different things. Book, concept, description, word, this, touch it, feel it, smell it. This is a book. Floor, put your hand on the floor. The word floor is not this. And you say, that's difficult, Paul, because what are you going to call it if you don't call it floor? Okay, carpet. No, what it is this direct experience. When your hand touches it, you begin to have that connection to it without concept or word. That's a direct experience. Okay, now, please hear this, as there's nothing wrong with concepts. They're very interesting. Just see they're not the things that they point at. But a good word, like book, anybody going to have a problem calling this a book? I'm not. We agree, it's a book. Wall, ceiling, floor, meditation cushion, light, bell. Conventional, you know, relating, we get along well with that. My car, your car, meditation center. Multiplicity of concepts and descriptions that point at direct experience. They're just labels. When you see that the word is not the thing, the word is just a label, then you begin to use the label or the word more skillfully instead of being used by it. You know what it means to be used by concepts or labels? It's called, I can't get out of my head. Some people lie down, get a full body massage, good quality body massage, good quality practitioner, good method, technique, and they're in their head the whole time thinking. They can't get out. they experience two worlds. I'm in my head, I'm asleep. There ain't much in between. So these labels are words, yeah, thoughts. We begin to see what they are, and to observe the nature of thinking. Then they begin to be friends, wonderful friends. Some people really feel this as they just fall in love with their mind. They fall in love with thinking. When we don't see the thoughts clearly, the chain of thoughts, then they're capable of weaving a story about our life that maps two fundamental tracks: successes and failures. This is a story in the mind. Successes and failures. And why don't we just add the success is gain and the failures are losses? In insight, yeah, in meditative awareness, these things turn around. Sometimes they totally invert. The losses become gains, and the gains become losses. The enemies become friends, and the friends become enemies. It's all a story that the mind weaves at times with thinking, thinking, thinking. And inside there, at times there's plans, planning, plans for security, plans to eliminate, if possible, where the insecurity is. And eliminate the insecurity and establish the security. And those plans, those ideas, those maps of successes and failures, habitually reminding me of who I think I am. Who I think I am, what I think I am. I'm in the I think, therefore I am. I'm having Descartes' insight. I think, therefore I am. And this thinking is dualistic. And this dualistic thinking is the root of tremendous suffering for humans. When this dualistic thinking is believed and held, there's no problem with dualistic thinking. All thinking is dualistic. There's no problem with that. Duality is beautiful. This isn't about eliminating duality. This is seeing the possibility of not being imprisoned in duality, not being held in duality. So the key is not, oh, these thoughts are wrong, don't have thoughts. The key is to see how the thoughts are being related to, see how the thoughts are being believed or held, see how the thoughts are thought about. And until that's somewhat clear, they appear, these thoughts, they appear to have a power to make you believe you're separate, and that you need to be defensive, ever planning, overly ambitious, driven, and territorial. Even just a little bit. I will not challenge that tendency to feel territorial, because some people in this kind of seat I'm sitting in do that sometimes. I had a teacher who used to mix it up a little bit. About 3-4 days into this, he'd say, "Now, when we come into the hall, sit wherever you want." And some people were sitting on your cushion, your chair, your white spot. I'm glad he didn't go further. Just sleep in somebody else's room. You want to get a little defensiveness going, a little territory? We're at a meditation retreat. It's about letting go, opening up, not holding on. It's not probably going to happen, but if you went into your room tonight and all that stuff, which ain't much, that you brought with you was gone, what would happen? Some of you might go, "Great. Somebody needs it more than me. Some of you go, holy smokes, my underwear is gone. My earrings. That same guy that had the cancer in the prostate, that got bombed with this therapy, that they take the radiation, they don't just shine the beam on it, they take a pellet of radiation and they bomb the tumor. It's the most effective way to actually knock prostate cancer out, I hear. This guy, when he had a heart attack, you know, the nurse is yelling at him, lift your pelvis. He's like, what? He's half drugged, he's got the oxygen. Lift your pelvis. He's like, what? Because you need to pull his pants down so they could do the stent, right? They got to go in here to do the stent. Pull it. Lift your pelvis. He's yelling at him, lift your pelvis. He's like, what? What? Well, somewhere in that lifting of the pelvis, which he eventually did, his pants got pulled down, which was okay, but his Birkenstocks, which were totally worn out, got lost. And the most important thing to him, once he got out of the hospital, was, where's my Birks? They lost them. And I had seen these things. They were trashed. Some people just trash that soul. They never glue another layer on there. And then they're attached like crazy. Don't touch them. They're mine. We got to get at this. It'll take a couple of days. The possibility is to begin to see the empty nature of thoughts. Now, careful here. Empty nature. What does that mean? Simple. The thoughts are empty of solidity. They're not solid. They're just if you gave them sounds, they'd swoop and move. Empty of solidity. Empty of permanence. They're not solid and they don't last. They come and they go. If it's a pleasant thought, oh, I like it. I like that this came. And if it goes, I go, oh, that was a nice thought. Where'd you go? If it's unpleasant, ooh, I don't like that you came. Oh, I like it, you went. Good, gone. Got rid of the thought. Whew. I'm glad the law of impermanence is operating. Mine is funny. I like it when it's the way I want it. And the Dharma, life doesn't bother with your menu sometimes. A lot of the time. It just says, here, 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 here. Take that. Take this. You don't want to take this? You don't want to take that? Okay, maybe you can tweak around that one. I'll give you something else. It's the mole. These thoughts do not refer to the true nature of things. Although, these thoughts are part of the true nature of things. Should I say that again? It's a very important distinction. These thoughts do not refer to the true nature of things, but they are part of the true nature of things. Everything is part of the true nature of things. Nothing outside. Until thoughts are seen clearly, they masquerade as the truth. They don't have the power, when they're not seen clearly, to reflect our true nature. That's why you cannot realize your true nature by thinking about things. Or thinking about yourself. You can't even realize any deep happiness by trying to think your way to it. Have you noticed? And you can't realize a deeper satisfaction and happiness by acting in certain ways. You can get some happiness by acting in certain ways and doing certain things. See how fleeting that is. A deeper, more profound, more subtle happiness comes by learning or relearning how to stop and see what's actually happening And that must and will include the thinking. So what happens is the thoughts are observed, and this for some people can happen in an instant, and for others it seems to take a while, like years, like 20. The identification with the thinking loosens. Because the thinking's never been a problem. Never. It's fine. It's part of the nature of the mind to think. It's the nature of the body to feel. It's the nature of the senses to connect. And it's the nature of the heart to feel. It's the nature of the mind to think. These thoughts have never, nor will ever, they be a problem. It's the identification with the thinking, the fixation upon the thinking, the belief in the thinking. That's where the delusion is. That's where the confusion is. And as that identification loosens, even just a little, and the movement of the thought is not interfered with, it's not obstructed, and those thoughts begin to move like the waves on the water, like the clouds in the sky. They begin to drift. They drift. They move. They rise out of nothing. And they dissolve into nothing. They rise out of space. They dissolve into space. They're born. They appear. They take shape. They change and they disappear. And then, as this is realized, something very wonderful happens. Very wonderful indeed. The thinking reconnects with the heart. And then no matter what the thought might say, what form or shape it takes, how long or short it lasts, that thought moves in an inner spaciousness of heart awareness as its base. And that base is unity and wholeness. Prior to that moment, the thought suggested separation, comparison, divisiveness. It's so profound in some cases that it seems like this is actually informing this. This becomes a servant of this. Whereas at times prior to this is the boss. And this is repressed, and this is beneath, and this is held down by this. And you don't have to be a man, although some men have that top heavy over the heart, a bit more than some women. It's culturally based, too. This awareness, this heart of awareness, is right here. What we're actually exploring is the possibility of seeing that it's right here. Not that we're going to become that, that we are that, and that the layers around it or over it start to loosen, and then it starts to come through. And it's compassionate. It's like compassion arises and holds any and every thought, allows any and every thought. Doesn't matter what the thought is. Doesn't even matter if the thoughts are identified with or not. Something arises that completely and utterly is benevolent. And it's right here, coming through these forms. So the heart of awareness then allows all the thoughts, without getting caught in believing them, or having to follow them, or reject them, or fulfill them. Think about that for a minute. Well, feel that. Thoughts not being followed, rejected, and no requirement to fulfill them. That's a kind of fulfillment. This heart of awareness, it allows all the stories. This isn't about getting rid of the story, having no story. This isn't about getting rid of the ego, having no ego. You ever met anybody that got rid of their ego? I haven't met them yet. I've seen humans whose egos or whatever you might call that, personality, the better word maybe. The personality is just a playful thing that's so not central. Something else is central, and this is just kind of sitting on the sofa, you know, a playful part of a much larger being. That's how it works. This idea of not having ego, crush the ego, suppress the ego, kill the ego. Imagine you're the ego. If you're all ego, and then somebody in here is trying to kill you, how would you feel? I'm not going to let you kill me. I'm going to run and hide. You know, you can't kill me. Everything wants to be. Egos too. It just loosens in its centrality. The stories, the fantasies, the fears in the mind can be met in this heart of caring, awareness. It's love. That's what awareness actually is. It's love. Not often as we associate to love. We often associate to love as a feeling. That's a kind of love. Attraction, I like this. Feel something. Warm. Satisfying. I love you. I love this. It's a kind of love. It's a much more subtle and sublime kind of love, and that is awareness itself. These thoughts, they actually arise and pass in silence. Everything arises and passes in silence. Silence is undisturbed. All sounds arising and passing in silence. It's right here. That awareness is silent, still. These thoughts, stories, fantasies, dreams, all of it arises and passes in the silence of our original nature, the silence of the Buddha mind, the Buddha nature. This is the healing of the mind. Nothing to get rid of. Nothing to get. Everything begins to be truly free, because it already is. I'm the only one that thinks I'm not. Carpet's free. Light's free. Well, not really. It's electric. It's a bit. Food is free. It's being itself. Lights, stars, river, earth. We human beings somehow figured it out, I don't know how, to think we're not free. And then we're working on becoming free. And see if we can tie, rather untie, the confusion. Heart, body, mind are ever opening like petals on a flower. No matter what shape, color, or texture they take, no matter what the mind thinks, opening means. As the mind is thinking what opening means, opening is happening through the mind thinking whatever it's thinking. No matter what the mind thinks, heart opening is. Whatever the heart is doing is opening. No matter what the mind thinks, body opening, breath opening is that that's happening. Even the thinking about the opening is ever opening. And then there's one more area that's the most subtle to talk about. Some words might help, though. It's the healing into emptiness, or the opening into emptiness. Now, this is difficult to describe and difficult for the mind to comprehend. But some things can be said. Emptiness, which is openness, same thing. Like all form, yeah, all experience, is best discovered directly through living meditation rather than through descriptions. If these things could be realized through descriptions. We could read a book. We could have a talk, listen to a tape, go on the internet. It's all over the internet now. Just listen to a talk, 10 minutes, boom, done. It's the living realization of these things that are described that truly makes a difference. Now, as that living realization, born from taking the one seat, emerges, at times description can come in a way that operates just like the meditation. Looking at a tree, all of a sudden the Dharma comes right through that. These things I'm pointing at come right through just seeing the tree, or just seeing the fish, or just hearing the bird. People wake up. There's a history of people who wake up just hearing birds sing. And these things I'm talking about become totally, totally, completely clear. However, because of the amount of confusion and delusion in the mind of many humans, the descriptions of these things often stay simply descriptive. So the words come out, they generate additional words in here, and then, oh, I understand. Understanding, conceptually, is not insight, it's not realization. Emptiness refers to the basic openness and non-separation that shines through when all small or fixed notions of self, me, or I are seen through and therefore dissolved in the clear light of awareness. That's what they're doing anyways. Notions of I, me, self, they're arising in passing. There might be one here now. I am this, I am that. I am the body-mind. I am old, I'm young. I'm man, I'm woman. I'm in Tampa. Is that where we are? Yeah, Tampa. I'm at the San Franciscan Center. I'm not as saintly as St. Francis. I'm working on my saintliness. Whatever. These notions, and at times they are fixed, calcified notions of self, as these are seen through the basic openness and non-separateness, which is empty of what? Of separation? Of limitation? Suffering shines through, and this occurs in the clear light. What is awareness? It's love and it's light. We're full of light. We're beings of light. Even if we feel incredibly dark, that's the light appearing as darkness. All there is light, in a sense. That's why it's beautiful to close the eyes and see into the dark. We see into the dark. Some of us, not everyone, loves the dark. Why? Because in the dark there's the light. It's a different kind of light than the light of the day. As poets go, the poet Rilke, German poet, he loved the darkness and used to write poetry about the darkness and drew out this understanding of the light and the darkness. Carl Jung again said it very well. He said, we don't become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. As the darkness becomes conscious, you see the light in the dark. This emptiness, this opening into emptiness comes forth when we see that our temporal lives are transitory. That one thing that we share very deeply is the transitoriness of this experience. If we're not careful, that transitoriness is something that we react to, and then we become very distractible beings, become easily distracted and disturbed. Little disturbance, a lot of disturbance. If you don't see the transitoriness of this ephemeral state, states unfolding. Body, mind, heart, transitory, sitting in, ever sitting in a vast web of life, an ocean of existence where nothing is disconnected from or separate from anything else. It's then that we see the openness and the emptiness are exactly the same thing. Openness and emptiness are exactly the same. The ever-changing, unpossessable nature of things shows itself as an unstoppable process. And in seeing this empty openness, holding, clinging, and grasping simply let go by themselves. Spontaneously. You don't let go. Letting go happens by itself. Temporal human life is comprised of a series of ever-changing processes. We've been naming them. There's a physical process, the feeling process, the memory or recognition process, there's the thinking or reaction process, and then there's the consciousness process. This is what's happening right here. Physical, feeling, memory recognizing, thinking reaction, and consciousness. These processes are dynamic and continuous without a single element that could be called an unchanging self. There's no solidity in any of it. No solidity in the sensations, no solidity in the feeling, no solidity in the thoughts. No actual I or me in any of those processes. If there's a sense of an I or me in any of those processes, that is a concept. That's an idea. That idea turns into a perception. That perception can turn into a feeling, and then I say, this is me. It's fine to say that. We all agree. I'm here, you're there. That's a conventional agreement. But if you see what's actually happening here and you see these processes, physical, feeling, memory recognizing, thinking, reaction, and consciousness, it's awareness that sees these things. So awareness here is different than consciousness. Consciousness is simply that knowing faculty of the mind. So the eyes see something without thought. Now thought's not there. The eyes just see. Consciousness knows the eyes are seeing. Consciousness knows the ears are hearing. There's actually a different consciousness that's happening very, very quickly with seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, thinking, feeling, moving very fast. Consciousness has no solidity. Awareness is what sees this. Okay, awareness is the space that all this happens in. So these experiences, these five processes called the aggregates, they arise like waves out of a vast ocean. And by the way, the ocean isn't just an ocean of sorrow. That's just part of what's in the ocean. That's like salt in the wound. The sorrow is like salt in the wound. It's a vast ocean of being, and all the forms are one with that ocean. We're in the ocean right now. We're never not in the ocean of being. And everything that arises, arises from or out of this ocean of being. And this is called different things in different parts of the world in different times. It's called the Tao. It's called the divine. It's called the eternal void. And this void, by the way, is not empty in the negative, depressed sense. This emptiness, this openness of the void is full. As soon as it's clear that everything by nature here, relatively speaking, is transitory and a change, you see the empty, non-solid, inseparable nature of it all, then that naturally turns into fullness. Or, in other words, it turns into fulfillment. That's what fulfillment arises from. It arises from the realization of emptiness. Because you can't experience, you can't see what fulfillment is when you're busy grasping, resisting, pulling and pushing, trying to get to something. That's why you can have all kinds of things. You can have a perfect house, gated community, have it all the way you want, and still be miserable. Because the mind is still confused. The mind is still lost in its story. The mind is still lost in grasping, resisting, dividing. And while I'm saying dividing, why not go with the other one? It's busy dividing and conquering. It's a little scary to go down there, because if you start to see what we as a race are doing to the earth and the conquering that we're doing, it's not just the sea turtles. It's pretty unsettling. In the name of I own it. In the name of it's my slave. In the name of I can do whatever I want. The delusion doesn't just operate inside so-called individual beings. It collectively at times manifests. And yet, all of that, even the most horrific activity, arises out of this Tao, this divine, this eternal, empty, full, void. Because all of it is indivisibly, inseparably interconnected with everything else. And all forms of life, however they're coming, are a reflection of this vast, whole ocean of Tao. The great sage and teacher Nagarjuna, he lived about 150 years after Christ, somehow made it to about 100 years of living. So he was around from 150 to 250 AD. Not bad in those years to make it to 100. He said it's simple. He said emptiness makes everything possible. As we truly sense the direct nature of experience, we can see all feelings and thoughts are ephemeral, and the nature of this body is porous. It's not just that there's pores all over the skin, but the whole thing is porous. It can be a little unsettling at first if you're busy thinking you are the body, trying to keep the body this way or that way. Start to experience the body as it truly is. Start to have insight into what it truly is. Feel it, sense it as porous, and some fear can come up. Most of the fear in the mind, by the way, is grasping at and holding on to fixed existence, holding on to fixed identity. When there isn't a holding on to fixed identity, there's much less need for fear. And by the way, don't forget, fear, when it's arising, is ever opening. So when fear is occurring, it's opening. That's part of life. That's part of the nature of this, is that fear comes at times, it opens. Everything that we were thinking, or therefore at times assuming, was solid and separate, and in fact is empty and open. We don't become open, we are open upon arising. As soon as something arises, it's open already as itself. Now it transforms, it changes, and goes away. Opening is happening as it dissolves, too. Simplest way to put that is life, existence, truth, dharma, yeah, the truth of the way things are, is ever opening. This is the shift from ignorance to wisdom. It's the shift from separation to unity, and it's the shift from struggle to peace and rest. And it's immediate, it's available, it's in our, you could call it Dharma code. It's in our birthright. It's inherent. It's given. It's already here. The task, or you could say the practice, or the path, if you like to call it that, is to wake up to this. To see it, to realize, wow, alive in this form. Because we have no idea, if we're going to be honest, what will happen when this drops, when this dies. And it is dying. Even as things are arising, they're also passing. There's birth and death. As you begin to see this birthing and dying process at the five aggregate level, body, feeling, recognizing or memory, thinking, reaction, and consciousness, one of the things that spontaneously happens is the fear of dying, which some people have more of, some people have less, that softens. The softer that becomes, the more lucid and open that becomes. And there's nothing to hold on to. And when it's time for this to drop, whether it drops suddenly, seems to drop slowly, when it finally drops, there will be a suddenness. There might be a sense of a process up to that. It's completely natural. It's as natural as us sitting here. Why be afraid of that which is natural? They asked the shaman, why are you not reactive to the cold? He lived in an extremely cold and icy place. And he gave a great answer. He said, I'm not reactive to the cold because the cold is real. See, what he's doing there is he's talking about why react to what's the nature of this experience. And the other thing that happens is as the fear of dissolution, as the fear of dying, that's what dying is dissolution, as that, yeah, is seen into, softened, not reacted to, not resisted, then what happens is spontaneously life or living becomes that much more free, liberated. And as you begin to see that the fear of dying is actually a disguised form of the fear of living, then these things don't become opposites anymore. Living is dying, dying is living. It's all changing, it's all transformation. It's all the nature of the truth. And then the need or the tendency or the habit of being defensive, trying to defend myself based on delusion, based on a delusion of separateness, is fundamentally untrue and never actually existed at all. It was just an idea, strong as it might be, that things are separate and I have to fight for my existence. I have to maintain my life, keep it my way, little or a lot. As this is seen through, that this is what it means to wake up. To see through the delusion of separateness, to see that it was never more than an appearance. That it was never actually here, in reality. It's the difference between reality and appearances. Both are occurring right here. Appearances are occurring, and reality is occurring. A reality is hidden inside appearances. And when you see deeply into what's occurring and the appearances of things, then you begin to see the reality shines forth right through the appearance. And that's the Tao. It's mysterious, it's vast, it's an ocean, it's an interconnected movement. And that movement includes all the stillness as well. And the stillness includes all the movement as well. There's no separation between movement and stillness. And that, in fact, this that's being described is 100% benevolent, safe, and ever-present. And we are that. We're not going to become that, we already are that. The idea that I'm going to become that is an idea that falls away as you realize you already are that. And everything else is too. And everyone else is too. I'm trying to keep this in the range of an hour. I'm well over. I was trained in the Dharma by someone who gave 2-hour Dharma talks, sometimes 2.5. We're going on an hour and 20 minutes. This is the end. Do you want to hear Einstein? Or who's the other character? Oh, Suzuki Roshi. First Zen master to come to the West. Let's do him. Watch what he says. Watch how the words work. To live in the realm of Buddha nature means to die as a small being, moment by moment. When we lose our balance, we die. But at the same time, we also develop ourselves, we grow. Whatever we see is changing, losing its balance. The reason everything looks beautiful is because it's out of balance. But its background is always in perfect harmony. This is how everything exists in the realm of Buddha nature, losing its balance against the background of perfect balance. Can you top it, Einstein? Maybe. A human being is part of a whole we call universe, a part limited in time and space. He, she experiences him, herself, the thoughts, feelings, as something separated from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires and to affection for only the few people nearest us. The opportunity, the task, is to free ourselves from this prison by widening the circle of love and compassion to embrace all living beings and all of nature. Did he top Suzuki? If you say yes, if you say no, that's just your perception. That's just your thought. He can't top or be topped. He just is, as is Suzuki. Thank you. Let's sit for just a minute if we can.